Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 21st of January, recording at 9:27 p.m. That's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, a quick review of the week. Now, in stock markets, well, let's take Asia first, as I usually do. It's been weak, and we have seen the ASEAN sector, which had been range-bound for, well, really since November, start to break down, led by Indonesia. And that's important because Indonesia had led on the upside in part of what I maintain is its mean reversion correction towards the rising 200-day moving averages, which represent the medium-term trend. Now, China A shares have also been weaker, although they rallied today, one of the few Asian markets up today. And some of the markets that had done very well, like Korea, starting to lose momentum, and Taiwan possibly has done very well recently also. So we're just, and Japan had a whopping big downward series of downward dynamics across its indices here today, and that had had a pretty good run recently. Now, in Asia, Europe today, which has been firmer overall, participating in that Wall Street-led relative strength that we were getting from really late November. Onwards into the middle of this month. Europe was steadier here today, but there is certainly some evidence of loss of upward momentum for these markets as well. Wall Street closed to the upside for the Dow and the S&P, less than half a percentage point though, quarter of a percentage point for the S&P. And the NASDAQ 100, I can see, closed down just over half of 1%. So the techs, which tend to lead, are a little softer in here. The Central and Southern America's markets, the big, Canada also, a little bit weaker in here today. Less small declines, though, overall. Government bond prices a little bit steadier against that background, gilts being the open only exception that I can see on my screen. Gold and silver, which had eroded a little bit of support this week. Well, they have eroded a little bit of support this week. So moving lower. In contrast, platinum and palladium are really quite steady. And the U.S. dollar, mostly sort of range-bound here overall. The grain and bean complex has been very strong. And that carried on today with a good gain. Looks like an upside. Not quite an upside breakout, but looks like wheat's getting ready to complete its first step above the base. More on that in a moment. The industrial metals, mostly a bit firmer. Cotton, strong in here. Cocoa, strong on the news out of Africa. And crude oil. Well, the NYMEX has pulled back this week. It's currently at 89.18, but I'm not sure, well, I think I am sure, that that's not the most important picture. For instance, the Brent is at 97.50, and it's really been shale gas, which practically all comes from the United States, which has been holding that light sweet crude price down. Okay, so what's going on here overall in terms of the big picture outlook. Well, as you know, we roared into the year end through with its very strong December, and that carried on into January. And as you also know, there people sort of talked about this risk on, risk off thing. It's sort of a banality, isn't it? We have had this often this correlation between the equities and the commodities. These things last for a fairly long time, and then they cease here. I think it's knee jerk as much as anything else, but I don't want to digress too much in a discussion of the causes of that. Mostly psychological, though, I feel. But what I've been fretting about for weeks is that the best recent game in town, and still the best game in town, has been these commodity markets, particularly the agricultural commodities due to the crop shortages. But I've also said that was by far the biggest threat to the stock market uptrends. Not protectionism, which isn't really going to happen. We get a certain amount of protectionism, but people know that their future lies in freer trade. We'll never get totally free trade, but in freer trade rather than much more restricted trade. And some of those commodity chickens are coming home to roost. Now, we've seen this first with the concern in Asia over inflation. And the overwhelming chunk of that inflation is food price inflation. There is also some energy inflation, but it's really the foods. And that's a factor elsewhere, and we're seeing, and this is going to continue here, because no country is really going to be able to avoid it. It's just that it hits the Asian region more than it hits the West, because consumers in those countries pay a higher percentage of their earnings on food prices. Some places like India, this gets really serious, and that's kind of cast a pall over the Indian stock market, largely because there was a lot of publicity about how the government had really bungled this and hadn't done the right planning. And Owen and I agree with that theme. In a democracy, one could argue that the government's been very hampered in terms of what it actually can do. But you get all these very, very small, inefficient farmers who are also at the mercy of moneylenders, but that's another story. And so what India really needs is some big, organized, efficient, collective farms, but heaven knows when that's going to happen. And then all the corruption charges that came to bear, and so that has taken India from everybody's favorite stock market of most of last year, up until, say, November or so, when these food problems really began to surface in a big way, into a bit of a pariah market here in the short term. The interesting question is whether that's now creating the buying opportunity here as India's come back to its 200-day moving average. Well, I'm a don't know on that one, partly because I'd feel happier about it if we hadn't had that change in sentiment. Sentiment is such an important factor in our analysis, and you also know that Owen and I say over and over again that governance is everything, and that's especially true of emerging markets. Particularly, investors are particularly sensitive to changes in perceptions towards governance in those countries. So the Prime Minister has gone from being seen as sort of a very wise, economically savvy leader to kind of doddering and not up to the job. Perceptions are always these perceptions are always an exaggeration. There's a big pendulum swing. It's part of the whole sentiment story. But what I'm trying to say is that that's worried people. And so we had the flight into Asian markets, and we're getting a little bit of a fright out of Asian markets as people overreact to the China story and so on. So yeah, China has higher growth than the higher inflation than the USA, obviously, but China also has GDP growth of roughly around 9 to 10%. And the US doesn't. So we want to be careful in terms of being too negative of China relative to some of these other markets. The great story, as far as the USA is concerned, is its corporate strength in terms of the multinationals. That's been a major Fuller Money theme. Cash-rich companies that have not only benefited from globalization, they practically invented it. And that's been extremely good for those companies, but not so good for the US economy for the simple reason that while the companies often get criticized, and the Obama administration is trying to talk them into pulling back and doing more manufacturing in the United States, but the simple fact is, if you want to sell in China, you have to manufacture in China. And anyway, even if you didn't have to do it, you'd want to do it because you can do it more cheaply. And therefore, you're more competitive and your profits are higher. But you know this story. So let's swing back to the West. As people came out of, well, people reduced some of their exposure to Asia, and I've done a little bit of that. I mean, almost entirely, well, entirely closing down my Thai position, which had done exceedingly well. I still like Thailand for the long term, but it, like all the others, became somewhat overextended. And then everybody said, well, buy Germany and buy the United States. But the US had a good run, and it's looking overstretched here right now. I reopened my NASDAQ short that I opened yesterday, and then it was going well, and so I put in a break-even stop, and that got stopped out, and I reopened the short a little higher here to today. So I'm short the NASDAQ, and the S&P is a short-term hedge here because I think these commodity chickens are coming home to roost, and the stock markets have had a good run. So this is reaction and consolidation and for some correction territory. In terms of the considerably longer term, I think the outlook is quite positive. But could we have a big correction in here? Yeah, it's not impossible for the reasons mentioned, already mentioned. It could even, and this is not a forecast, but it could even turn into a sort of a choppy, turbulent sort of mini bear market. That's because the people who say, oh, 20% and that's a bear market, will have some candidates. But the really important question I suggest for everyone listening to this broadcast is that are we likely to see another 2008? And I think absolutely not, would be my view. Or if it does happen, it's going to be because of some horrendous climactic event of biblical proportions. And even with a strong La Nina continuing, I'm not going to forecast that. So a little bit of a nervous period. if you lightened up a little bit on things that were testing their highs or had become overextended relative to their rising 200-day moving averages, well done. If you have a few positions there, or a lot of positions, which have done very well and are up near their highs and want to prune a little bit, well, you know our view at Fuller Money, we always say sell these things when they're really doing best, or take some profits when they're doing their best. Not after everybody is concerned about it because it's already had a big correction. And those of you who have some cash, and I pretty well always have some cash, and if we were to get the bigger correction rather than the smaller reaction for stock markets, that's up for grabs. A lot depends on what these commodities do and how central banks respond. If we were to get the bigger reaction, I would certainly be putting more of that money to work in equities, certainly not government long-dated government bonds, where I'll maintain a short position in the bond futures prices. Okay. So, what about these long-dated government bonds? Well, I think that there's a bit of complacency about. There certainly was. There were loads of complacency before we saw the big backup in yields that really occurred from September on into December. And because that's paused, people are now saying, well, these maybe are a buy, and I don't think yields are going to rise too much, people are saying, and so on. I say, just go in and look at the 10-year charts of yields and look at the 30-year charts of yields and put them up on the longest chart you can get using that charting function in the library. Go in and click on the 50-year. If the data is there, you'll get it and more. And it's very apparent to me that 30-year bull market in terms of falling yields is over, and that the base building and bottoming out process is underway. And some subscribers will remember that I tell a point against myself, that I also thought that was happening back in sort of 2006 and 2007, when yields were edging higher, started to break some downtrends, began to look a bit basey. And then, of course, the big 2008 meltdown hit and took the yields down to new lows. When I was talking about Owen, talking about all that with reviewing that with Owen, I mean, which we do on a daily basis, and of course, what one of the big premises of the chart seminar, one of the most important points I think to remember is that with these big trends in particular, that very often the bull market loses its consistency at the penultimate peak, or if we're talking about yields coming down, that's the bull market, being the bull market, loses its trend consistency at the penultimate low. In other words, it'll look like maybe it'll lose momentum, look like it's changing, and then get one more hit. Well, that's very clearly what's happened on these long-dated government bond markets, and I think the very fact that that we had that prior inconsistency, which actually lasted for several years, I think it lasted for about 3 years, that may well lead to some complacency on the part of some observers of the fixed interest markets. So again, I think that the short term is a little uncertain, but I think the medium, because of the base building activity, but I think the medium term and longer term risk for the next 20 years at least, the bias is to the upside. Now, when I say that, if you look at those long-term secular trends, both up and down for those long-dated government bond yields on the charts, and I commend that to those of you who are diligent students of the markets, you will see that you get interruptions which can last to that secular trend, which can last for a year or more. And I mentioned one that lasted about 3 years. So we really are talking about the big picture, long-term outlook theme there. But yeah, I expect interest rates to be higher in a year's time, and 5 years' time, and 10 years' time, and 20 years' time. Okay, and we'll play that accordingly. So I don't want to have any long-dated government bonds. Currently, I don't think bond yields and certainly short-term interest rates aren't high enough to cause a major crisis for global stock markets. But you don't have to have a major crisis to worry, everybody. And people are becoming more worried, thus my hedge shorts, and then that'll create some buying opportunities. But expect some more rock and roll for this year. That's goes with the territory, doesn't it? And again, something I've mentioned before, a lot of emails coming in saying, gosh, you know, my portfolio is just doing incredibly well. And I say, well, that's great. Congratulations on taking advantage of your opportunities. But, you know, that's not normal. That's exceptional. It's an exceptional environment. And so we're kind of in more challenging currents here right now. But that doesn't mean that there aren't plenty of opportunities out there. I've wished that I hadn't cut my grain and bean position back quite so much. I shouldn't have let myself. Well, I grabbed the profit on my rough rice. I think I should still have a long position there. That pattern can easily support higher levels. I'm glad I've still got my wheat. And I wish I still had some of my corn. I don't want to get too overextended in these things because they don't become more bullish the higher they go. They become less bullish the higher they go. An important thing to bear in mind is that the CFTC is having a six-month discussion period, which started, what, I think last week, regarding commodity market speculation. And while this would be knocked back and forth between the Republicans and Democrats, that it's going to prey on sentiment for a while, and it will probably mean that 3 to 6 months from now we'll have less speculation in commodities than we have in today, as people adopt a slightly more defensive posture. Precious metals. You know, I've been nervous about them really since about November. They got overextended, then we started to get the downward dynamics. Gold and silver particularly, I wanted to participate in the sector still because I certainly think that the secular trend is still intact, but I participated in platinum and palladium and made some money, but not that much given the swings. Too easy to get stopped out. Some of those big swings, unless you just trade without any stops at all on those leveraged positions, which I was unwilling to do at this stage of the cycle. But I constantly describe gold as a bit of a crowded trade, and more recently, proportionately, silver has been an even more crowded trade. And we've seen some erosion of support. They too are getting these mean reversion corrections. Whether they get bailed out by a weaker dollar sooner rather than later is up for grabs. But and when you get a very crowded trade, and you know, you go on the internet and you see some of these services that send out these daily emails. Of course, we're one of them, but we're not in that category that I'm referring to, about to refer to here. You know, these gold bugs, they just come back day after day after day, you know, talking about the next few thousand dollars on the upside. Well, It'll get there someday, but you know, there are lots of reactions and ranges and so on that punctuate all these moves. And I think I'm just saying that every investor, I think, needs to be very acutely aware of how important sentiment is. And the more bullish stories you hear about gold, and the more bullish reports you hear about gold, and the more cautious you want to be. And when you get lots of people talking about it's over, but you can still see in your charts that it's still in the primary overall upward trend, then you want to be more bullish. The tactic overall, which I haven't played with as much success in the last year as I had in earlier years, because I get more nervous at the higher levels. The tactic that's worked is you buy on following the setbacks and let it out or tighten up stops when it's doing very well. Okay. What about crude oil? Say that's what I'd come back on that one. That is very, very important. And I just remind you that that Brent crude traded in the UK and on the IPE, that closed at $97.50, and it almost touched $100 last week. Whereas the NYMEX crude is down at 89, and I said that's due to the shale gas. Now, shale gas, when we first began to hear about this, and we had a very good report from our friend at Erste Bank, we said that we described it as a game changer and took a certain amount of abuse from some of the more ardent peak oil advocates. But yes, a game changer in the sense that it bought more time. And the shale gas has kept the natural gas price low in the USA. It's at least 50% higher in Europe. And it's kept crude oil prices lower as well. And that's been a good thing because energy is the one that really does count, and most of all in terms of commodities. And we said big spikes in crude oil, that's what causes recessions. And we just to remind you, the last spike in big spike in crude oil, I think, peaked in July 2008. So, no grounds for complacency here on the oil price. It's certainly not at crisis levels, but it's adding a bit to those inflationary pressures, particularly outside of the USA. And again, you know, that's one of the commodity problems that we face here going forward. It's one of the reasons why I've been building up this position in the nuclear mining, the beg your pardon, the uranium mining shares, and I think the whole nuclear industry is set for mega growth over the next 20 to 30 years. And while those shares have all doubled, they doubled from exceptionally low levels, having been run up on a big speculative binge prior to the whole 2007-8 unraveling. And boy, they really did unravel. And now they're moving back up again, but this time I think it's for real, because we can see those new power stations led by China coming on stream in the next starting to come on stream in the next couple of years, and then there'll be progressively more as time goes by. And the commodity shortages are just reminding everybody that if you are living on a hand-to-mouth basis, which became quite fashionable when commodities were in abundant supply. You buy just in time. That's the way they did it. We called it just in time. And so you didn't keep any inventories. Whereas back in the 1970s, people built up massive inventories because there was the big commodity super cycle back then. Well, this is an even bigger commodity super cycle because China and all these other progressing economies are involved in it. So just in time is an outright unacceptable gamble, and it's hurt the United States in terms of a lot of its positions, such as rare earths, metals, and I don't think they have enough uranium, although they got plenty of nuclear weapons that they can cannibalize for uranium for their 104 power stations, nuclear power stations. But the stockpiling's underway, and it has been for the last 6 or 7 months, and I think it will continue. But the uranium chart will be our guide, and it's sort of cranking up most weeks on a consecutive weekly basis. I would expect that to happen again when we look at the charts over the weekend or on Monday. So, interesting. Interesting. In the short term, I think the grain and bean complex is a better speculation than precious metals. And I think there are likely to be some other. Well, there are other opportunities among the soft agricultural commodities. And I think energy is an important sector to be a bit overweight at this time. And I think I've gone on too much. I didn't mention currencies. We got more ranging than trending here overall, but in all the hyperbole, and don't we get plenty of it in this financial industry, don't you wish that you had a yen if you're in Japan, or an Australian dollar or a US dollar or whatever your local currency, or a euro, a pound, for every time you've heard somebody say that the euro is about to collapse? Well, here it is at 136.21 against the US dollar. Whereas we were told that it was going to go back to parity, and I don't think it will. So if the euro doesn't collapse, then maybe they'll start talking about the dollar collapsing again at some stage. I don't think that will happen at all. I don't like fiat currencies, but I think we'll probably see them more range bound than anything else. With the commodity currencies remaining firm more often than not, but their governments try to prevent them from appreciating too much. And the Asian currencies staying firm more often than not. But again, their governments are anxious to see that they don't appreciate too quickly. And on that note, apologies for the length of this audio, but much to talk about. I hope I didn't rabbit on too much. So, have a great weekend. All the best.